good afternoon. I had a somewhat different few minutes prepared, but given the fabulous opportunities presented by earlier speakers today, I thought I might change a little bit to pick up on some of the points that have been made, particularly from a research point of view. But before I do so, a couple of stories. One, a very good friend of mine from the CFA who lives at Whitfield in Victoria. And as everybody here knows, Whitfield's been through a torrid time. But when it was all done and dusted, he said to me, "I know you don't believe we do enough mosaic burning. We bloody well do. We've done Victoria. We're going to do New South Wales next year and South Australia the year after." The second story, I think that's... And you've got to imagine a cartoon here where the firefighter, the volunteer, is standing in front of the wall of flame bearing down upon him or her, and he's talking to a boffin in a white coat with a calculator. And the question the firefighter is asking of the boffin, "Please, Dr. Jones, could you tell me the formula for prescribed burning? It's such a complex business." It's a horrifying proposition that if we make prescribed burning such a complicated business that we just can't get it done. So I think those two images are the things that the environment group, if you like, or indeed the ecologists, have to learn to deal with. We can't propose solutions that are so complex, that need such high-level inputs to detailed models, that they will never be used. It comes down to very much the issue of resources, and I think this has been made, point has been made over and over again today, that in the asset protection zones, the authorities are struggling there to meet the whatever targets are set or even what they might wish to do. The increase in area of assets, interface areas, causes enormous difficulties, and the issue I think was very clearly enunciated by Rob Rogers earlier today. The New South Wales coastline is literally a huge mosaic now of urban interface stretching over thousands of kilometres. And even with a tenfold increase in budget, it's going to be extremely difficult to conduct enough prescribed burning to protect that particular zone, let alone the broadacre areas well distant from the major assets and people that we serve to protect. But therein lies the rub. And as Phil Cheney said earlier today, as Phil absolutely pointed out so well earlier today, it's not just the asset protection zones that we need to be concerned about. We've got to find a way to get fire back into the broader landscape. It's hard enough getting the resources to deal with the asset protection areas. How are we going to, quote, get the resources to allow the people to do the fuel reduction in the broadacre areas? Now, before I sort of go on with that point, I think a number of people have emphasised a coalescing of goodwill and of intention amongst land management agencies and amongst the fire and emergency services in order to try and improve the use of fire in the landscapes. And I agree with that. However, we do have to deal with the nuts and bolts, the practicalities, the legislation framework, the management plans. There are still management plans for very large areas, and I'm going to talk in a tenuous way here. We're not talking about one land tenure versus another. There are management plans for large areas that say very clearly there will be no fuel reduction. Let's say that again. There are management plans for literally hundreds of thousands of hectares that say no fuel reduction. It's specific. Now, that may well be okay, but it'll be hard to convince the firefighters of that when the next fire comes along. Now, I say it may be okay. There may well be good reasons for having no fuel reduction in some areas. But for hundreds of thousands, even millions of hectares, no fuel reduction, I think we have to be very careful about that. Now, I have been, as I said, provided with an unequaled opportunity to talk a little about some of the research we've been doing. Bushfire CRC, in conjunction with the University of New South Wales, has established large, long-term research experiments to address some of the issues in water that were just spoken about. We've established a network of research sites across the High Country that deal with the alpine ash forests, that deal with the snow gum woodlands, addressing the specific questions that were raised. In other words, do these respond in the same way as the mountain ash forests? So that work has been established and is now ongoing. We have established the long-term experiments on prescribed burning and the impacts of those on nutrients, on water and water quality, and we've done that in the High Country, and we've done that in conjunction with the other great controversial subject in the High Country, which is grazing. But we're doing it in a way that we take the grazing and the fire together. It's the interaction of land management. So we can put the grazing on one side, we can put the fire on another side, we can put conservation on one side, we can put production forestry on another side. The real issue is how do we manage the totality of land for all of the values that we want? And so we're looking at the interaction in properly designed, rigorous long-term experiments where we will be able, eventually, to get the sort of data that we need. In the same program, we have, in one fell swoop, doubled the number of eddy flux towers in Australia that are capable of measuring carbon and water fluxes at the landscape scale. So that infrastructure is now established. It's been 18 months of hard work, but it's now out there, and so we're integrating with the other eddy flux towers around Australia where we measure carbon and water fluxes from the biosphere to the atmosphere and back again at the landscape scale. So we have, as part of the bushfire CRC's effort, and as I said, the University of New South Wales have invested heavily in this, we've put in place the sorts of experiments that were mentioned by the previous water panel, that were mentioned by others as being needed to be done. We are certainly trying to address community concerns that relate to the long-term management of public land and also private land. So I'll just finish my comments with a simple plea from the common man. Increasingly, we are being told as individuals to pay more for our airline tickets because of carbon costs. We are being told to use water more frugally, and we'll be fined if we don't. We are being told to manage the fuels on our property, and we'll be fined if we don't. We are being told to manage biodiversity on our properties, and we'll be fined if we don't. I think it's very important that when we talk about public land and we talk about the future and the sorts of policies that we're going to institute for public land, that we impress on our politicians in particular that penalising individuals for using too much carbon, too much water, or threatening biodiversity only encourages individuals to turn the finger back on governments and said, well, you've neglected to manage the fuels, neglected to manage the water, neglected to manage the biodiversity on public land, so why the heck should we do anything good on our private land? So I think it's an important message that we have to get right what is the request of the individual as opposed to the requests of governments. And in particular, I'm referring here not to the agencies or the bureaucracies, but the politicians. Thank you very much.